stuff on here?
How are we going to restore 15 to 20 million jobs? I am your future.
You have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, good morning, everyone. I hope you are cool, and welcome to another edition of American Workers Radio. I have to tell you, we certainly have suffered through a couple of hot days and heat waves and everything else, and I hope that you're going to be sitting back during the next hour listening to another edition of our broadcast. Today, I'm here with the very distinguished Joseph Evangelist, our consumer advocate. And I ask that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in. You can tune in on the radio by going to 860 AM radio. Let others know that. And if they're on the internet, they can listen from anywhere in the world simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link, which is right there on the left-hand side. Well, over the last week, we have seen so many things happening in the news. The thing that really was very good and helpful to our Buy American Made campaign was the fact that Diane Sawyer of ABC World News and also Sharon Alfonsi, a news correspondent, brought attention to the fact that all of the attire for the United States Olympic team is being made in China. Now, that, of course, concerned me very much. And it's not only the clothing that the athletes will be wearing, it's also all of the memorabilia that people will be buying, the hats, the T-shirts, the little trophies, the medals that people will be taking, to put around their necks. All the trinkets have been made outside the USA, which I feel is a total... Right. We should have a mob scene. Few of the elected people in Washington said we should take all the uniforms, pile them up in a bonfire and just burn them because this does not represent America. And what's really disappointing about the whole thing is the fact that this takes years of planning to get this into any country that the Olympics being hosted. All of the athletes try to do their best to make sure that they're on the team. And yet, our coordinators of the team did very poorly. They really screwed us. They humiliated us. And I'm very pleased that Diane Sawyer, on her World News Tonight report, brought it up because then all of the other media outlets start to speak about it. And it was in every newspaper, all the radio commentators. Other than that, we could have heard about this a day before the event. Now, one of the things that I heard in the last 2 days, I've been hitting the trail saying that we should get all the athletes' new uniforms. We have enough people. We're talking about 500 or 600 representatives of America. They could be dressed. And if it's to the point now, even if they were not dressed all in the same attire for the big procession of athletes, let them wear T-shirts and slacks made here in the USA. And that could have been done from the first second it was announced on ABC World News with Diane Sawyer and Sharon Alfonsi. Joe, what do you think of the idea?
Well, I think the issue that we have is this is one of the things that you can point out about the country is there's also been articles recently about how many of the Olympians are actually almost like starving out because in the United States, the Olympics is not supported by the government heavily. Our basketball team is made up of professional people and Mark Cuban, opposes actually letting the professional players play there because they've had a couple of injuries. And as Mark Cuban said is, you sign a guy for $100 million over the next 4 years, and the next day he goes down at Olympic training with a knee injury and he might be gone for a year. And, the owner's going to pay $25 million for something that he got nothing
for. Well, that's true. I understand that point. But, see, when it comes to the planning, the actual planning of when the Olympics are coming, who's going to host them. 4 years ago, in 08, early 08, when the Chinese delegation came here, they were looking at some of our universities to see how they could best host the athletes when they came to China. I remember very well, the just distinguished gentleman came to the exhibit hall and he said, we are here to, you know, just brush up on our way to make sure that we're going to be welcoming America's athletes, but we also see that America, especially Philadelphia, historic Philadelphia, is welcoming people from around the world. So we're sort of watching how the people react to the American way. And in fact, let me just digress a bit. That was the time that the man said to me, following the Olympics, we will restore our industries, and then we are going to start our second industrial revolution. Well, from that time, now, do we know where the uniforms were made for the athletes in 08? Do we know where they were made for the athletes in 2010? No. We do know where they're made in 2012 because Diane Sawyer brought it up during her program. And I can't compliment her enough. I know that there have been major advertisers very, very displeased with this campaign. But I think it's very necessary. I know some of the bigger companies are angry with me that I didn't go away yet because they said, oh, it's, you know, this guy is going to try to influence people. We already have our business in the stores. We're bringing the products over. Why should we change a good thing now? But as far as our Olympics, whether they're supported by individuals, by fundraisers, the team should be dressed and should be carrying flags in the processions and giving away trinkets made here in the USA.
Well, but the issue that you have to recognize is you're using the Olympics as an example of where things should be different. Is my understanding is they went to Ralph Lauren, and Ralph Lauren has for years has made the Olympic uniforms, and Ralph Lauren sources its stuff overseas, whether it's in China or Pakistan or Vietnam. And the fact is they went to their standard vendor that they've had for years, and nobody questions what the vendor does. And that's the way, that is the American way. Is if you go to Walmart, you say, well, I really don't know. You know, Walmart offers the best prices, and I don't know where they get their stuff from. The fact is they offer the best prices because they manage their supply chain the best.
And you are right when you say Ralph Lauren went to his traditional source, and that with through this news report and the reaction of the people, whether they were in Congress, on both sides of the aisle, the news media, everyone got the message that this type of business can't continue. We can't be business as usual anymore. When American workers are suffering, when they're standing in unemployment situations, where they're standing in job fair lines, where they're going out to companies and putting in applications and finding out that out of three jobs available, 500 people came out to apply. It's now no longer business as usual. And that is what I have been promoting for the last 5 years. The fact that people should not allow business to continue as usual. When you go into a store, make yourself very known. Don't be dilly-dallying around. Some of these people act so helpless. Well, I don't want to sound like I'm against other countries. You're not. You're for American, period. I mean, we've worried about everybody else in the world for years. Now it's time for us to worry about America. Now you see, Ralph Lauren and the committee made a statement that everybody will be dressed for the next Olympics in 14 in all American attire. Well, I really still think there's time, and it should have been done from the first second it was announced. We should have downsized whatever the materials, the clothing was necessary, just so that they could walk on that field in the grand procession and say everything that we have on our body is represented by American manufacturers. It's a tragedy, and we have to do something about it to do justice to the American people. part of the problem that we have here, and we've been discussing, and by the way, last week after our broadcast, I received a number of very good people. In fact, that I received a call from Stella, and I'll tell you, this woman, she could do an entire broadcast all by herself. She had so many good ideas to share. The bottom line is this, the part the problem in America is that so many people are given benefits without having to work for them that they don't understand what it costs to buy things and pay bills from a paycheck that they're earning. That's a big problem in America. We have so many people, oh, I'm unemployed. Okay, I'm unemployed for 3 years. That should never happen in America. We should have a job. You're unemployed from here. You go to the next place. But that's because national leaders didn't look out for us all this time. We've just been dilly-dallying around, playing these games, worrying about the world, worrying where we're going to give foreign aid, and no aid for America. Where do we come in? When people stop me after these broadcasts, after my commentaries, people tell me, you know, why aren't the things you're discussing mentioned every day in the media? In fact, I'm going to write my commentary this week to say this. The national candidates are actually wasting our time with all of these advertisements that they have on. I want to know, what are they going to do for America? Where are our jobs in the future? What are we going to do to end the tax and regulation standards where the people are not killed if they try to come back? I believe that there is a tremendous amount of opportunity here in the USA, but people have not been picking up on it. This woman, Stella, let me mention her again. She had some very good comments to your comments last week. I thought they, when she called me, I was just so impressed by what she had to say. And this, by the way, didn't happen to us here in the USA in just the last few years. It's been an expansion of giveaways to people who are able to work, but they have no job to go to. So you really can't say, well, your benefit is going to be cut so because we're sending you to this particular job. Whether that job is over, you know, you're overqualified for the job or not, we're sending you to the job. I don't know, what would you do? If you were in the top leadership position today, Joseph Evangelist is going to give an executive order to get people to work. What would you do?
Well, in that case, I'd have to declare myself dictator, because if you actually have to work with Congress in this country, you're out of luck. I mean, I watched an interview with Barack Obama and his wife the other day, and he said, I grossly underestimated what it takes to work in Washington. And he had been a senator. And I mean, that is part of the problem here is basically over the last three or four decades, even since the civil rights movement, is we've been trying to make everybody special. Is we amp up welfare, we help training, we went through desegregation, we went to bus students from poorer neighborhoods into better neighborhoods so that we'd mix everything. And all that we've actually done is dilute the solution to the problem. Is, you know, if you go to other countries or if you go even to private schools, is students are separated out based on how fast they grasp the material. There are advanced placement classes that run ahead. Whereas in much of the public education, at least in my experience, is, you know, everybody moves at the slowest. And if you take they want to mainstream, you know, special needs kids like autistic children, which, you know, I believe that they should be separated into classes and have specialized learning. But when you move them into the main classroom, everybody slows down to move to that pace because they become the pace setter. And I've actually seen in the Philadelphia school district where they actually will stop a grade to let the classroom that has the special needs children catch up to everyone else, and they have a review week and there's no new material. And I'm like, no, you separate the children out by who learns abilities the fastest and you push them forward. And, you know, that's how you get people across this, because there are different things. The people who are going to be doctors and high-end engineers are going to separate themselves from the pack.
The thing that is interesting when you're saying this is Who makes these decisions? This is the problem. Are parents involved making these decisions? Who exactly is making these directives come about where we are seeing the educational system be flat instead of excelling in one thing or another? It's just like going to college. You choose what you are going to be. You want to be a hairdresser. You want to be a lawyer. You want to be a nurse. You want to be a doctor. We're not allowing that. We're just putting everyone into one big mix of soup.
Well, actually, we're going to be going to break, but actually, I think what we're doing with college is we're actually giving people too many choices.
Right, I agree. And that's the part of counselors. Counselors, let's talk about that when we get back. We'll be back in a few minutes. You're listening to the Wednesday edition of American Workers Radio with Michael Blihash and Joseph Evangelist.
For all of your banking needs, call on Washington Savings Bank, which offers checking and savings accounts, IRAs, CDs, home mortgages, and home equity loans, along with a host of other services at its five offices at 2701 East Allegheny Avenue in Port Richmond, 2548 East Lehigh Avenue in Fishtown, and in the Northeast at 2900 Comley Road, 10663 Busselton Avenue, and 8729 Frankfort Avenue. Banking hours at all offices of Washington Savings Bank are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Friday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday from 9 a.m. to 12 noon. The Port Richmond Kazimierzwielki branch at Edgemont and Allegheny Avenue is also open on Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. For more information about the many services provided by Washington Savings Bank, call the main number in Philadelphia at area code 215-698-9400. That's area code 215-698-9400. Or visit a Washington Savings Bank near you.
The office of Leon Mankoski, attorney at law, is located at 2624 East Allegheny Avenue in the Port Richmond section of Philadelphia. His office is open Monday through Friday from 9 in the morning till 5 in the evening, and he does have additional evening hours on Tuesdays. For more information or an appointment, call Leon Mankoski, attorney at law, at 215-739-8521. That's 215-739-8521.
After a long day of play, give your kids what they really want. Great-tasting snacks and meals from Giorgio. Giorgio's delicious mozzarella sticks, toasted American cheese sticks, and macaroni cheese triangles will satisfy even your pickiest eater. Since 1928, Giorgio has stood for quality and nutrition, so you can count on them for great taste and convenient snacks and appetizers. Look for these great Giorgio products and more in your grocer's freezer, and for recipe ideas, log on to GiorgioFoods.com.
Well, welcome back to another edition of American Workers Radio. And if you're enjoying our broadcast today, go to your phone and invite a family member or friend to tune in to 860 on the AM dial in the Philadelphia tri-state area, or on the internet by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com. We were discussing the reason we are having the difficulties here in the USA with so many of our jobs being outsourced, and now the people in the companies that would like to return to America saying that there's not enough skilled people available. Now, they're saying that this is something that should be reconsidered and should have never ended by the school counselors. And I know Joe has kids in public school at this time. I'm going to ask him to take this and address this issue.
Well, one of the things that I see is I like looking at the statistics and then seeing how they're spun. Because the raw data is much different than what you hear from the media or you hear from the politicians. And, you know, with the school districts, what you hear is it's for the children. We need more money for the children, for the children, for the children.
But is any of that money really justified? Can we go to a computer site and see, program by program, how much it costs and really what is the benefit
to
us?
What you have to recognize is in a broad brush, if you spread it far enough, it's for the children. But you look at the programs that are diverting money from the education side of what the school does. Is, you know, last week I mentioned that, you know, we had an issue where, you know, kids weren't we had the national free lunch program, and then, you know, kids weren't eating breakfast, so then the school district started to offer them breakfasts, and then they started offering them snacks, and then, you know, we had problems with busing, that busing was too expensive, so now if you live more than a mile and a half away from the school and you're in 6th, 7th, or above, we just give you a weekly trans pass, which means that we spend, you know, $90 a student to get them around. And, you know, what are the side effects of this? Well, we had flash mobs in South Street a year or so ago. And how were the kids getting there? They were getting there on the school bus passes, because we don't give them tokens to get to and from school. We give them a trans pass so that they can go anywhere they want for a week.
Is that right? Is that 24 hours a day?
Yeah. They basically buy the same one that the workers do.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought that was just during school hours.
Well, I mean, I think it's easier for them. And from what I can tell, is these kids use them until midnight. They run them for the whole week because, you know, nobody seems to enforce that. So the catch here is, you know, we're adding all of these expenses, is, you know, but what are we taking away from is parents aren't responsible for feeding their children. Taxpayers pay for it. It takes away from education. We need more money in education. Parents aren't responsible for getting their kids to school. Okay, so then we go in, and last year my kid got into school, and for the first time last year, I spent the summer with him doing work. I felt that the school district wasn't doing a good enough job, and we were going to work on the things over the summer to get him up to what I felt should have been skied, because what the school district says is acceptable and what I feel is acceptable are two completely different items. So we go through and we get in there, and he gets back in the first week of school, and he says, yeah, this is much better. You know, I had him memorizing times tables, and to the point where it was almost instantaneous, and he was doing very well. But then they go back, and for the first time, he's like at the head of the pack of students who are coming back at the end of the school year. And he says, you know, they're teaching some stuff from, you know, 4 months and the end of last year. So I did a little research, and what you find is, you know, they say, well, you know, kids lose information over the summer. You even see the commercials. The kid bangs his head and the letters fall out the other side. But the catch here is children aren't stimulated in the home anymore. So what you see is children whose parents interact with them, who take them on trips or whatever else, tend to retain more information than children whose parents open the front door and let them run out. So that was part of the reason why they had the school enrichment programs for years, is we wanted to be able to stimulate the kids in the summer so that they didn't lose so much information. But my son, since he wasn't trying to play catch up in class, he started to recognize a few things. And he says, you know, when we're in math class, you know, there's a couple of Asian students who just blow through everything. I mean, they're faster than anybody else. I said to him, think about it. Why do you think these guys are so good at mathematics, doing change, these problems and whatever else? And I said, well, what did he do during the summer? So he goes in and he talks to the kid, and he worked at mom and dad's store, and mm-hmm. he made change all summer. So the fact is working with money and doing mathematics is something very common, because he encounters math all the time. And this is the catch, is so this kid blows through all this stuff because he sees practical experience in it. The problem is what we teach our students to do is fill in the circles. Yeah,
guesswork a lot of times.
And, you know, we teach them how to take the test. They spend 6 weeks prepping for the PSSAs. I mean, it's absurd how long they take teaching these children how to fill in the dots properly and how to interpret the questions based on how they're written. It has very little practical transference into another area. I mean, you don't encounter word problems in life that say, you know, Johnny has 3 apples, Susan has 4. They put them in a pot and take 3 out. How many should each person get left? Yeah. You know, you don't encounter that in real life. And if you do, it's not worded that way. It's, you know, a group throws it into a pile and you go to split it up. Who should get what?
Right, right.
And that's the problem that you have, is the practical application is not there.
What you're saying is exactly what America's employers are saying, that many of the people walking into the job fairs, walking into their companies seeking to be employed, are really not skilled. They don't have a lot of the skills that they need because they've been just ushered through school and programs without really being directed.
Yes, I mean, the states are actually based on what they get from the government, from mandates, what they get funding-wise, is based on attendance and performance. I work with a school, and this I couldn't figure this out for years, is we'd get extracts from the student list, and, you know, over the course of a week, there'd be students in, students out, they'd be out of the course, they'd be back in the course, and I couldn't figure it out. And finally, I talked to them, I said, what is this? I said, you know, we're spending lots of time trying to track down why this student is enrolled this week, he's out for 3 weeks, and then he's enrolled again. And they said, attendance-wise, if he's thrown out of school, he goes to juvie hall, he gets detention for 3 weeks, he's withdrawn from the education system because he can't appear as absent because they'll lose state funding. So if the kid gets sent out and he's out of the area, he is withdrawn from the educational system for that time. So what happens is, when you're trying to look at it, he's in, he's out, he's in, he's out. But the fact is when he's there, he's enrolled. When he's not there, he's not enrolled.
You see, that's a good point. You know what that shows me? That we are not teaching students to be punctual on their own, to think on their own. And that reflects down to the employer. What employer is going to be interested in employing someone that walks in the door with 1,001 excuses? Reminds me of a woman that I had assisted one time, and she wanted a part-time cleaning lady because she had a broken arm. And when the woman came to her house, she said, well, I just want you to know, I don't do blinds, I don't wash windows, I don't do floors, linoleum floors, because I don't want to slip, but I'll do the tidying up and the dusting and stuff like that. And the woman said, well, that's what I wanted you for. The tidying up and dusting I could do on my own. I need somebody to help me. I have a broken arm. I need somebody to do the windows, to dust the draperies and stuff like that, and to do the floors because I'm, you know, trying to rest to make sure that my arm heals appropriately. And this is another example, is we want to do the job. We want to be hired for the job. But when we get there, we want everyone to do it the way we want it to be done.
Well, we allow people to have too much selection. And I draw parallels between things. And think about going to the zoo. My son asked to go to the zoo, and you think about it. And I said, you know, he wants to go see the big cats or whatever he wants to see. And you look at the big cats, and you see them lounging around. And you talk, then once in a while, you see somebody who's an expert on the big cats. And they say, well, what you see in reality, what you see in there is not real. Because they're either born in captivity or they lose the drive. They can't hunt on their own. Mm-hmm. They've lost that ability to be self-sufficient. You take the lion out of the zoo, you dump him back into the wild, and he'll starve because he's just not prepared
right
to do that. We've done that through many of the programs here. I can't think of his name offhand. There's a black economist who said that the worst destruction of the family has been done by the welfare system. It wasn't segregation. It wasn't slavery. In slavery and everything else, the family bond was very, very tight.
Very tight.
When civil rights was, families clung together. And many of our immigrants cling together in the same way. But when we started to help people and say, okay, you know, we need to make things equal, we're just going to give you money to do stuff, is what we did is we took their drive to excel. What we're finding now is, at least in my opinion, is the immigrants who are coming in have a drive. The American people don't have a drive because we know that no matter what happens, the worst case scenario is we become the lion in the zoo. Somebody's going to keep us from starving.
The government's always going to be there.
Mm-hmm. The government is, look at the things that people are complaining about. Housing prices went up too high, now they're crashing. Education prices have went up too high. Food prices are going up. Look at where the money that does this is. We're complaining about the Fed all the time, that they're printing money and they're causing inflation and they take food out. Food goes up and down and is managed by the subsidy program. We pay people not to produce food. We try and price stabilize things.
Then I have a question. Why are we paying people not to produce food? Why are we paying farmers not to farm in this country?
Because in years past, I think the concern that they had was that you'd have a farmer with land, he'd produce lots of stuff, and he'd push the price down, and there wouldn't be profits for everybody. So they're trying to make sure that everybody can survive. The problem is as these small farms are picked up by companies like Dole, our subsidies for the orange crop are going to, you know, multinational conglomerates, and, you know, it's all going into one place. You don't have the issue today of, you know, Bob goes into Montana and finds that he can grow corn on his farm, and Montana is dirt cheap land-wise, and he decides that he's going to put 1,000 acres of corn, and he throws enough onto the market to affect the price.
So we've given money to the farmers not to grow so that the price of everything could go up.
Right, but then you have the other side of this is then we mandate the use of ethanol, which means that they have a choice of sell the corn to make ethanol or sell the corn for food. Well, they sell it for ethanol because it's more profitable to sell it that way, and the food price goes up.
Well, why can't we go to sugar as they're doing in Brazil?
Because Brazil went with sugar because Brazil has 3 growing seasons for sugar. We can't grow that here, so corn is the best thing, or switchgrass. But the catch in the United States is we have quotas on what you can do with corn. But here's the catch is when corn gets sent to ethanol, okay? So the amount of corn that we have available for food and other stuff goes down as it gets shuffled to ethanol. But here's the catch is what people in the United States don't realize is corn is the feedstock for all of our meat industries. Whether it goes cattle, pigs, corn is the feedstock. Corn is the feedstock for most of the additives that we have in our foods, cornmeal, etc. When they mix these things back up, it's corn or soy based. Well, the fact is we're now moving this whole structure over the area. And when ethanol became requirement, food prices started to escalate.
Okay, I think this is another issue that has to finally... Uh-oh, it's time. They're giving me the rooster crow. It's time for these ads. And please do support our sponsors and all of the people that sponsor the various radio programs here on 860 AM Radio, because they are helping keep America's economy alive. We'll be back in a minute. Michael Steinman, attorney at law, has 2 offices in Philadelphia, one at 17th and JFK Boulevard in Center City, and the other at 8510 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia. Call attorney Michael Steinman's office at 215-564-1866. That's 215-564-1866. Or in the evening or weekends at area code 215-322-0235. Michael Steinman, attorney at law, always available to assist you in the English or Polish language. Polka Deli is located at 2719 East Allegheny Avenue in the Port Richmond section of Philadelphia, and they feature Polish-style meats and deli products and a selection of imported products from Poland and Polish-American products. Stop by Polka Deli, 2719 East Allegheny Avenue, and see the great selection of products they offer. For more information, call Polka Deli at area code 215-634-3750. That's 215-634-3750. The Polish Roman Catholic Union of America, known as the PRCUA, established in 1873, is the oldest Polish-American life insurance organization in the United States. They offer outstanding life insurance plans for men, women, and children from $5,000 all the way up to $1 million of coverage per person. The PRCUA is a national fraternal organization, so people can secure life insurance plans and annuities from anywhere in the USA. Their main office is in Chicago, and their satellite office is in Port Richmond, Philadelphia, at 2636 East Allegheny Avenue. The Philadelphia office is open Monday through Friday between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m., and if you're not available during those times, representatives will meet with you in the evening or during the weekend. For more information, call the PRCUA Philadelphia office at area code 215-425-3807. That's 215-425-3807. Welcome back to our Wednesday edition of American Workers Radio. And I do want to say thank you to everyone that has been spreading the word. All of the reactions from our broadcasts have been very good. We appreciate your emails. You can email me at michael@americanworkersradio.com. And of course, I do appreciate meeting people in my travels that let me know that they agree. One of the people this past week was telling me that it's something that she's been hoping to hear for some time. And at the age of 50, and her sisters are younger than her, she said that it's impossible for her to understand how half of the people in her family are now unemployed in America. So she's really pleased that we're doing this, and she's very complimentary of Diane Sawyer and all of the newspapers now that are beginning to pick up the process of what are we doing in America. Even Dom Giordano and Chris DeGaul on 1210 Radio, they're all doing very good work talking about what's going on in the USA, what are we going to do about the jobs, and every one of them has picked up on even the U.S. Olympic situation and has helped to bring it to more and more people. So please do spread the word, and as I mentioned earlier, when you call any of our advertisers, let them know that you hear about them during the American Workers Radio broadcast or the Polish American Radio program here on 860 AM radio. Joe, I wanted to just mention something which has been on my mind for a while. The fact is that 30% of America's businesses pay 70% of the taxes that support the United States of America. What I have been trying to do is promote the fact that we need more businesses so we could have 40% of the businesses supporting America, not be a burden upon the 30% of the businesses. We need growth. We need school counselors and principals and mayors and governors and elected officials at every level discussing what are we going to do to get our boys and girls in a program that's going to suit them for life. That was the good part of America's education system 40 and 50 years ago. When people tell me that they went into wood shop and they were a carpenter, they found out that they loved to do carpentry, and then they had a living for life. A man just stopped me over the weekend and told me that he was in school, in high school for 4 years, and then he went to one of these places, Lincoln Tech, to become a air condition repair person. He said, I wish they had that offered me that in high school, because after high school, I had to go into this program and pay much more. If I had known that already in high school, I would have prepared myself in the last 2 years to go into that service industry. So what would you do if you were the person in charge of education and you would demand that people have to put statistics on the table as to what are we going to do to get our kids into a career and then be able to have more of our employers not have the ability to say we don't have any skilled people in America?
Well, there's a couple things that you could do. Is one, it depends, and it also depends on who you're targeting. Are you targeting the current unemployed or the generation that's coming through education
now? I want everyone targeted. In fact, this woman that's called me last week, Stella, she made a suggestion. Now, I'm only going to digress for a minute, and then we're going to go back to this. She made a suggestion which stayed in my mind for the last week. She said, You were talking about daycare for the children, how much we're paying and this and that and the lunches, and they had to expand it. She said, I raised my children. My children are raising their children. We need to have daycare for parents to learn how to be parents because they're not doing that appropriately these days.
Well, actually, what I would actually do is I think that the catch that you have is by giving everybody money, you're making everybody independent. So everybody feels full freight. I've went through a divorce, and the people are listening to the people at the courthouse, and there's a stunning realization that they have that, to me, it's just absurd that they don't grasp it. Is you have a two-family home, you know, kids in there, you're running a household, and then the family split, and he gets a house, she gets a house, and they say, I can't afford this. Well, let's see. You had two people paying for something. Now you have two people paying for two of something. Obviously, there's going to be less in each of those areas. In many cases, we even skip that. We don't even have a family unit. It's, you know, he's over here, she's over here, you know, baby mama number two is over here. I mean, I've encountered people who, you know, there's three fathers to one woman's kids, and, you know, they're running four different households for this.
And who is paying the bill for all of those children and all those households?
In many cases, there's a huge amount of support being chased around between the system. And then in many cases, the kids are also on welfare.
Okay, now, so here's a question about that. Because all of this is pertaining to the American business, because they're being taxed to pay for all of these programs, which is really killing business in America, the ability for us to grow jobs in this country. It's a terrible thing. Would you want to go in business knowing that so much of a percentage of every tax dollar that you're paying in is not going to fix your roads and make sure the stoplights are working, but it's going to programs for people who don't now know how to be parents or
Well, that's the argument. Is when you look at the parties and they're arguing two sides, is there's a catch. Is let's take an example that has huge support in this country but doesn't really, in my opinion, doesn't solve any problem. Is we're going to tax people over $250,000, and we're going to leave all the tax for all the lower end people. The other, you know, 99% are not going to get their tax raises. And here's the equivalent: is there's a water line running into your house, okay? And your three neighbors decide that they're going to tap into the water line above you. And they turn them on, and what you find out is there's not enough water pressure to actually run your shower in your house. So you go to the local housing board, and they say, well, you see, this guy over here, we're going to have him turn his off because we think he can pay for his own water line to be in. But the other two lines, we don't think that they should be able to just tap off this line. So what we're going to do is we're going to have this one off, and you're still not going to have enough water pressure to solve the problem, but we're going to make a step and we're going to move forward. Well, for the guy who has no water pressure, this is a stupid idea because, you know, yes, there's going to be more water pressure, but it still doesn't solve the problem. This is the problem with the tax proposal by the Democrats, is they're going to recover of the $3 trillion, they're going to recover $1 trillion, and they're going to continue sending $2 trillion out over the next 10 years. The answer is get rid of all of it. Because the fact is the goal is to have enough revenue to power the things at the end. You need enough water pressure to move water to the second story of this house. If that means that everybody upstream has to get off because they're mm-hmm. killing everything out, they have to get off. You can't pick a piece and say it's progress if the bottom line doesn't solve the problem. I mean, I don't care how many people you throw off upstream until you fix the problem on the bottom. There's nothing. Is saving $1 trillion doesn't do anything when you're losing $2 trillion a year.
Now, here's a question I have as we speak about this. I'm looking at the national debt clock, which shows that we are $15.8 trillion in the hole. If those people earning $250,000 or above were taxed more, what would it really do to help our deficit?
It's going to slow the growth. It's not going to reverse the growth. It's going to slow.
How much would you say, an idea? Because right now,
we would probably, I think, ballpark, probably it'll slow the growth. Instead of $1 trillion a year, it'll be $700 million a year.
How much do you think we could get more out of those people earning $250,000 a year?
Well, you could take everything if you wanted. You could take everything, but what you're going to get is you're going to get that the people, if they're going to take everything that you're earning, the goal is to stop earning. And this is where
That's
things
right.
in this country have mm-hmm. a problem. And this is what the Republicans see is if they want to go after everything you have, then you stop the engine so that you're not burning through what they're taking. For example, is one of the things.
So that is where the statement comes in, where they say the people making those extra profits are the people creating the jobs.
Well, I'll give you an example. Is let's take something like in the divorce court as an example. Is there's a huge outcry of people of he quit his job because, you know, he doesn't want to pay child support. And this is a small scale piece of what you see at the country level. Is let's say you're making $100,000 a year, and the state is taking, so after taxes, you're going to take home $65,000, okay, optimal tax rate. And the state says that we feel that you're going to give $30,000 to the kids. And I know people who made $100,000, paid $2,800 a month, they paid $30,000 in child support for their children. So they're $65,000 after taxes, $35,000 that they get to keep. Well, the guy says, well, you know, I'm working 90 hours a week, and at the end of the year, I'm getting $35,000 for myself. Well, you know, I can work 40 hours a week, make $50,000 a year. The state's going to take less money for child support, mm-hmm. and I'm going to end up with $30,000 when it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what these people do. And they say, oh, well, we're a victim. Well, no, but this is the catch is, from a tax standpoint, is if they want to take everything, you stop doing they're going to take from. It's not an issue of whether or not people aren't willing to pay the tax. It's they're not willing to pay the tax for what they're spending it on.
They made big business look like the big, bad person. However, without businesses and businesses wanting to invest in America, we're not going to go the next step up. When we come back, I want to talk about what can we do to end America's deficit problem, or at least stop it and move forward, because there's a statistic I'm going to share with you when we get back. You're tuned in to the Wednesday edition of American Workers Radio. I'm Michael Blihosh here with Joseph Evangelist. We'll be back in a minute. Henry, no rooster? Okay.
Yolanda Konopatska de Scipio, attorney at law, is available to handle your legal matters. She's part of the well-known firm Bennett, Bricklin, and Salzburg, and works in all areas of the law, including immigration, personal injury, compensation, and real estate. Yolanda Konopatska de Scipio is fluent in both English and Polish and welcomes clients to contact her from throughout the Philadelphia area and New Jersey. If you need legal assistance, call Yolanda Konopatska de Scipio at area code 215-423-4824. That's area code 215-423-4824. The Polish National Alliance, America's largest ethnic fraternal life insurance and investment organization, encourages you to open a PNA annuity. Your deposits are tax deferred. You can open the account with $500 and then make future deposits in any amount in your tax deferred annuity. For more information about PNA annuities, IRAs, and life insurance programs, call the Polish National Alliance at their toll-free number 1-800-621-3723. That's 1-800-621-3723. And complete details will be sent to you from the National Office. When you call, you can also request that a local PNA representative contact you directly with further details about PNA annuities, IRAs, and their many insurance programs. Call the Polish National Alliance at 1-800-621-3723. That's 1-800-621-3723.
Dr. Eva Maciak has two dental offices in Philadelphia to serve you. One at 3084 Armingo Avenue in Port Richmond, another at 4250 Richmond Street in the Bridesburg section. Dr. Eva Maciak will provide you with quality dental care at affordable prices. For more information or an appointment, call Dr. Eva Maciak at area code 215-739-2787. That's 215-739-2787. Dr. Maciak speaks both English and Polish. Welcome back to our Wednesday edition of American Workers Radio. Today we discussed several issues, and you know, as we were just sitting here, I thought to myself, maybe we're going to have to bring in a few educators. We have a new superintendent of schools. Maybe he or someone else could come on to discuss some of the things that are not being discussed within the system. From what I understand, there's some positive changes going to be happening in Philadelphia school system, and that should be a reflection of what should be taking place in every city and state across the USA. We can't just continue to have people come in and be babysitting them. They should be learning something and getting a skill that they will be satisfied to use for life. While you're in high school and middle school, you should be able to cultivate what you're going to be in the future. How would you like to best see yourself? Some people would rather be in manufacturing. Others know that they want to be lawyers or doctors, while others would rather be offering a telephone service, you know, working, driving in a bus or something like that. There are bus drivers that I have spoken to coming here in the historic district, said that they love their job. They wouldn't do anything else because they like taking the people around, bringing them from the different states, letting them know where they're going, where they're passing by. They absolutely love their job. We need more of this, but in every level of employment possibility here in the USA. What would you say, Joe?
Well, the hard part is it's who's going to be the risk. Is one of the things that I was saying is you know, you draw comparisons of a small area, you know, a family unit and how to support it. And when you split in a divorce with things like support and alimony, et cetera, I said is, you know, people make decisions to change their lifestyle because the argument is the same as that you see when somebody changes the structure, asks for custody of their kids. You know, the fact is they're paying to support a system that they don't agree with and they don't feel supports them. And that's the problem with taxes is businesses do not want to throw more money into a system that doesn't provide workers with them, that demonizes the business owners, and goes after your thing is the more you put in, the more they take. So the harder you push, the more tired you get. So the solution is at a certain point you stop. And the catch here is business owners are smart at making the decision on when to stop. There was a gentleman who wrote an article, and he said, who's better off? And he said when he was in college, he worked at a gas station. So he got out of his apartment, he walked downstairs, he walked two blocks over, he sat in a gas station. He was making, say, $10 an hour at the gas station. He sat in there, he got done, he walked back home. Then he got out of college, and he got a job in Center City. And, you know, he's making $20 an hour. But here's the catch, is to get his $20 an hour, he has to get up an hour earlier. He has to battle traffic for an hour to drive to Center City. He pays $20 a day to park. He has to buy a suit. He has to handle his lunch because he's now away from home, so he can't, like, run over and pick something up from his apartment. He has to battle his way back home at night. He has to pay for gas. He has to pay for insurance. He has to pay for a car. And he says, I was better off working at the gas station around the corner for half of what I'm making working in my career. And this is the catch that you have, is there is an optimum point. And unfortunately, as we continue to regulate, we continue to tax, and we continue to seek funding for more of these programs that don't actually help people move into business, what's happening is people are deciding that it's not worth pursuing that. I know in my business is I've had to make a decision of during the summer, do I work heavily during the day and pay for childcare, or do I work evenings while the kids are, you know, they get ready for bed, they're watching a movie, I start working, I work while they're a couple hours asleep, and then, you know, I sleep and I get up with them and I have a little less sleep than they do, or do I take time off there? And the catch here is it's a weighted decision to make. And that when you look at the decision, there are times when you say not working is the solution. Because whether it's for tax purposes, whether it's to avoid childcare costs, whether it's to avoid the I have to pay $200 a week to put my, or $100 per child per week to put them into a camp. Well, you know, if you're looking at 12 weeks, you're looking at $2,400 in camp costs. It takes a lot of hours of work to cover that camp cost. You know, in some cases, it may be worth taking the time off in order to offset that cost, because the cost of entertaining the children is more than the cost of running it.
You know, you brought up some very good points, and that is that some of our youth do not understand what their parents have to go through to get them to camp, to get them into private schools, to get them onto different types of programs. They don't understand that. So, Joseph, we had a great discussion, and we're going to continue this very discussion next week, because an hour of time is certainly not enough. But I do want to thank all of you for tuning in. You will be able to hear a rebroadcast of today's program in a little bit. It'll be posted up on AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Just click on the Listen Anytime Listen link here, and you'll be able to hear the rebroadcast. Kindly email it to your family members and friends. Joseph, thank you for coming in today. Henry, thanks for another great job at the board. And we enjoyed that rooster and everything else. And Tim and everybody else at the studio, we want to thank all of you for doing your very best. Things are moving along. They're getting more positive. And I want to say thank you once again to Diane Sawyer, because I know that she has been given some grief from international sponsors who don't like the fact that these reports are coming up on the national scene. Until next Wednesday, I wish you the very best. Stay cool. And I'll be back for our regular Saturday program at 11 right here on 860 AM Radio. David Zenia.